Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's The Sedorik Group of Steward Partners Special Market Update. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during the question and answer session. Please note today's call may be recorded, and I will be standing by should you need any assistance. It is now my pleasure to turn the conference over to Casey Snyder. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Chloe, and welcome everyone. Casey Snyder and Tom Sedorik here, and we thank you for making time for this afternoon's The Sedorik Group's Special Market Update conference call. Tom,
hey,
can you take a quick time?
Tom Sedorik here. Oh, sorry. Tom here. I want to say thanks for joining us, folks.
So it's been a really interesting year for markets, and instead of trying to summarize that by adding four pages of heavy content to our year-end letter that we sent out a few weeks ago, we figured hosting a conference call might make more sense, knowing that we will also be sending out our 2023 annual outlook slide deck in late January. Also, our last few email updates have contained a lot of market-centric content in an attempt to try to provide important context, knowing that on the surface, this has been a relatively unpleasant year to be an investor. So today's format is going to be a little bit different than our traditional conference calls and is really meant to be more of a conversation between Tom and myself about some of the key themes of 2022 and an attempt to answer some of the more common and some of the more important questions as we wrap up another year. To begin, we will provide a brief summary of our expressed thoughts coming into 2022. And from there, we'll go into a little bit more detail about a number of themes because of how they may have impacted markets this year and because of their relevance as we look ahead. And these themes are as follows. We are going to discuss equity valuations, inflation, rising yields and an inverted yield curve, the impact that rising interest rates has had on markets, bear markets associated with recessions, and then we will finish up with some conversation about the history of recessions and recoveries. And then like all our calls, we will provide ample time for Q&A at the end. So to start, I'm going to briefly summarize some of the expressed thoughts from our 2021 year-end letter and our January 2022 outlook. Again, this is a year ago, so think back 12 months ago when inflation was beginning to rear its ugly head, and yet interest rates were still stuck at zero, coupled with historically expensive domestic equity markets. And at the time, we spoke a lot about the TINA effect. That's an acronym, T-I-N-A, that stands for There Is No Alternative. And it was on full display as investors chased returns within real estate, private equity, cryptocurrency, NFTs, that's an acronym I haven't heard for a while, and traditional equity markets. When it comes to households, households within all income brackets appeared to be in better financial shape than in 2019, so pre-COVID. Wage growth had picked up considerably, and so overall the consumer was in relatively healthy shape coming into this year. There was also, though, a mountain of global debt which had been accumulated over the past 14 years in efforts to stave off deflation, but had finally led to a resurgence of inflation. And we expressed concern about the end of low interest rates being the end of an era of easy money, therefore easy returns. And we spent much of 2021 addressing risk creep within client portfolios, harping on the importance of discipline, and also the importance of remaining calm during times of market distress. And probably our most expressed concern was that with most investments around the world being priced off of bonds, that should interest rates and or inflation rise higher than markets anticipated, it may be the catalyst that finally brings down valuations. And that is exactly what has essentially prevailed over the last 11 months or so. And as everyone on this call knows, we're not speculators. We have no crystal ball. Having said that, you know, coming into 2022, global markets were ripe for disruption, and we communicated that and had been taking action prior. the combination of factors coming into this year were unique. We didn't have any history to compare it to because the unique combination of ingredients has never really come together before. Granted, every economic environment or landscape is unique, which is why every bull market, every bear market, and every recession are different. This time is always different, but valuations within stock markets and bond markets, and many other markets for that matter, had never been as extreme as they were coming into 2022. And what I mean by this is that the opportunity set coming into 2022 was as ugly as we've seen personally, or even when you look back at the history of U.S. markets. We knew that everyone liked looking at their statements at the end of 2021, but internally here within our team, we were looking at markets going, okay, this isn't going to end well. You know, something eventually breaks. So with that, let me turn it over to Tom so he can talk a little bit about U.S. equity valuations coming into 2022, some of our expressed concerns, and how that sort of played out this year.
Thanks, Casey, and thanks for that introduction. Many of you have seen us in meetings over the last few months talk about valuations coming into 2022 and the fact that they were 4 standard deviations away from the norm. That's historic by any measure. The most expensive category was clearly the technology names, what we called FANG, the Facebook, Apple, Amazon, et cetera. Those were all names we cautioned about in 2020 and 2021 because they have been leading the market. And at one point, the FANGs attributed to 30% of the S&P market cap. That's just plain nutty. So growth averaged over the last 10 years about 15 to 17% a year. Many of you remember a chart that I used to show at the end of the 1990s. So the last time distortions were quite so great was, in fact, the late 1990s, when we just come off 2 decades of double-digit returns in the equity markets. And as you all recall from the dot-com bubble, if you were investors then, it did not end well. That chart still sits on my desk right today, and I'm looking at it as we speak. The most expensive area of the stock markets, growth, fell considerably, while the less attractive area of the last 5 years has held up relatively well and even rallied, and this is the areas of growth, of value, and sometimes the energy sector. Foreign equities, which we continue to hold because of their relative valuations and high dividend yields, continue to remain relatively attractive. They've had some headwinds because of strong U.S. dollar in recent months, but that may turn around at some point. That dollar may provide a huge tailwind for your foreign equity exposure. Casey, why don't you talk a little bit more about the bond market, if you don't mind?
Okay. Well, I think so. Naturally, when equity markets are as mispriced as they were coming into the year, investors often look to the bond markets for safety, except this time there was little safety to be had, at least in the short term, because bond markets had also been horribly priced for the better part of the last 12 to 14 years because interest rates had been pegged near zero, and with low rates come low returns. But inflation had been running very low throughout that time as well, so low, in fact, that many talking heads proclaimed inflation was all but dead. Eventually, low rates lead to big problems because the world and investors can only afford to make very little money on their conservative investments for so long before they have to start adjusting their inputs and outputs or risk profile. Or said differently, they have to adjust their savings and spending rates. And what I mean by this, if you think back to the year 2000, $1 million in a 10-year treasury bond would generate around $55,000 in income. Now, for the better part of the last decade, you needed around $2.75 million to generate $55,000 in income. But when you adjust that number to take into account inflation, even though inflation was relatively low, you really need closer to around $5 million to generate the same sort of purchasing power that $1 million afforded back in the year 2000. So this means that without interest rates rising, people were going to have to start spending less or saving a whole lot more. So bond markets were horribly priced coming into this year as well, And the Fed recognized this, and they recognized the need to increase rates over time and had projected to markets that they were going to raise rates incrementally over the next 4 to 6 years and bring rates up to around 2.5%. Great plan on paper, except the return of inflation was not transitory, and that was something that we cautioned about last year as well. And it was exacerbated by several factors, a big one being the Ukrainian-Russian conflict. And so you have the interest rate world's greatest kryptonite, that being inflation, making a dramatic return to levels not seen since the 1970s. And in an attempt to quell inflation, the Fed and other central banks suddenly found themselves having to increase interest rates quickly and steeply. And so what was meant to take place over a 4 to 6 year timeline and in incremental fashion was instead condensed into a 9 to 10 month time period well in excess of what was expected. And so when you have historically expensive stock markets coupled with bond markets pegged at zero and low interest rates being the primary support mechanism to justify historically expensive stock markets, in addition to real estate and the NFTs I mentioned and cryptocurrencies, and then you suddenly increase interest rates, all asset classes reprice and they fall in value. And that's what's happened. And that's still what's happening to a certain extent as markets look for where and when inflation will calm and where will interest rates settle. And so if you were to have looked at your statements in January of this year and then closed your eyes and reopened them in December, balances would be lower, but overall it probably wouldn't look like a dramatic year. But it was really the path by which markets fell and have since recovered some this year that made it as dramatic as it was. And the real anomaly in 2022 was how the more conservative area of the marketplace, that being bonds, fixed income, was negative in dramatic fashion to the likes that we haven't seen in anyone's lifetime on this call. And so to see various bond markets down 8 to 30% alongside stock markets being down around the same, if not more, is highly unusual. It's actually only happened once in the past 100 years where stock markets and bond markets have fallen in tandem for three quarters in a row, and that occurred back in the 1930s. So with equity markets being down the way that they were earlier this year and still are today, to Tom's point earlier, equity markets were incredibly expensive coming in. Therefore, it would be normal to see equity markets fall another 20% or so from here, again, because of how expensive they were coming into this year. And still, most areas of the U.S. equity markets aren't cheap. So let's stop here and stop looking back at sort of what's transpired over the last 11 months. And Tom, I want to move forward. I want to look ahead and I want to ask you a question that we have been receiving a lot of lately in many meetings. And that is, will there be a recession? How long might it last and how bad might it be? So take it away.
You notice, folks, how Casey always picks on the old guy for these questions about history. So the answer to that question, plain and simple, is we just don't know. And we don't predict recessions. However, there is an interesting signal in the markets, and it's something we've written about. In fact, we wrote about earlier this year, which is called the inverted yield curve. What the inverted yield curve means is when short-term interest rates are higher than long-term interest rates. That has preceded many recessions. It's not 100% reliable, but as of this conference call, the yield curve is in fact inverted and quite considerably. Quite honestly, what's the hottest deal in town right now? It's the 12-month U.S. Treasury bill paying over 4.5%. Will it stay there? We don't know. Why does this all matter? It only matters if your plan is not a durable one. And our job is to make sure we build durable and sustainable plans and to foster adaptability in our clients, their families, and most importantly, in their plans. Adaptability has always been a hallmark of what we try and teach for our clients. It's been useful in the past, and I can assure you it will be useful in the future. Casey?
Yeah, I want to add one thing to that, just back to, you know, why does it matter when we think about recessions. The thing that I think about without being able to predict the future is, and I think it's important for people to understand this just for context, is how on average, bear markets associated with recessions have been more extreme. They've been deeper and they've been longer. And I think an easy way to think about it is that recessions tend to coincide with an increase in unemployment and a shift in consumer spending to some extent, and typically some type of pullback by the consumer. And naturally, this reduces corporate earnings in a way where it takes longer for corporations to increase earnings and cash flows. Bear markets not associated with recessions tend to be a result of temporary market distortions or some sort of brief economic disruption. And they don't coincide with dramatic shifts in consumption or unemployment. So when I think about, will there be a recession? How bad might it be? I'm really thinking more about, hey, if there is one, in all likelihood, the equity markets are likely to fall a little bit further and are likely to remain down a little bit longer than they otherwise would. Tom, before getting into some of the silver linings that we've been discussing regarding this downturn and whatever may lie ahead, I am going to point out your experience here. And I am going to ask that you share a little bit about the recessions and the recoveries that you've experienced throughout your career, because we talk about them as being relatively normal. You've lived through a number of them. So can you just share and express some of what you've learned, some of your experiences throughout recessions over the last, as you say, what, 38 years in our profession?
You're making me laugh, Casey. Yes, it has been a while, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to be able to talk to you today with that experience in my back pocket. Now, you're picking on my age again, friends, but I don't mind that happening because with the experience, we talk about the dreaded recession, and I think the first thing I want to say is recession should not be dreaded. They're a natural part of the economic cycle. It's like having an oil change in your car. It flushes out excesses. I'll admit that the great financial crisis, 08 and 09, was extreme in terms of recessions and near calamity. And many of the recessions that we've experienced over the last 30 years, have typically involved a V-shaped recovery, like 1982 or the early 90s. And that is not always the case. My first real experience with the recession was in the 1970s. I was obviously quite young. I was not in this profession, but my father had been an investor for quite some time, and that was a recession that was not V-shaped. It looked more like a long U or an L, but it did, in fact, buy my first stock in 1974 at age 20. And if you look back at how that might have worked out, you can tell it was probably pretty timely. So we look at recessions as opportunistically as you possibly can, and we hope that you can too. Recessions are always different. They're often scary, but often present some of the best investment opportunities of a lifetime if one is patient. And I hope for those younger investors on this call that may not have experienced a recession, that they look at it opportunistically the way I did when I was 20 years old. Just a reminder, every recession, every single one, has been followed by a recovery of some sort. Our more seasoned clients who've been there and done that know this. Our newer and younger clients who may have, you know, this may be their first serious downturn, first serious recessionary environment, we ask you to stay with us, stick to your plan, and continue to be optimistic about the future. So Casey, do you want to share any of the good news about these recessions? Oh, I lost Casey. Casey lost his connection, folks. So I'm going to talk about silver linings. So if you don't mind, bear with me. One of the things about recessions, and Casey touched on it a minute ago, is the fact that higher yield. So, Casey, you there? Folks, I apologize. You're hearing the technical difficulties in the background. Oh, Jeez, you're back.
Sorry about that. I'm back. I don't know what happened there. We've had some cable issues. So where are you, Tom? Where did I lose you?
Well, I started to pick up for you, Casey, and talk about silver linings. So maybe I might just finish off a little bit with higher yields. And then I'll let you take over about lower valuations. So we talked about the fact that we now have a higher interest rate environment, which provides a headwind for the stock market. But for income investors that have been starving for yield for the last 15 years or so, all of a sudden now these higher yields are kind of attractive. And we're starting to see this play out in our client portfolios. Higher projected yields show higher projected income for many of our account balances. And that's despite our account balances being lower, but many of the investors on this call are looking for income. So that's one of the silver linings. And it's not a bad deal if you're retired or approaching retirement and then need to live off your income. Casey, I'm going to pass it back to you now since we've got our technical issues solved. Talk about the lower valuations.
I'll say that silver lining number two here is that lower valuations bode well for long-term returns, which matter a great deal to those in the midst of their savings years. And like I said early on, really low rates coupled with high valuations meant that people were going to have to save considerably more than they had expected. So we also view downturns as being sort of the origin for future wealth creation. Silver lining number three, which is one that you've heard us talk a lot about over the course of the last 11 months, is that of for tax loss harvesting opportunities. And to Tom's point earlier about down markets being a normal part of the cycle, it's really important that we try to take advantage of them either with new money to invest and or by harvesting losses to accumulate tax credits with the IRS. And this will be especially important should tax rates rise over time, which is something that we believe is likely. And then the fourth and last silver lining here is that at some point, especially if equities resume their downward trend, bonds should resume their role of being a diversifier and protect on the downside. Because traditionally, bonds are negatively, or they're supposed to be negatively correlated with equities, so that if equities fall in value, bonds rise and act as a buffer for volatility. And this negative correlation should return at some point, given the attractiveness of higher yields. Like we said, the hottest deal in town right now is a 4.5% plus 12-month Treasury bill. That's looking pretty good, given that we haven't seen that in, I think, since 2007. So to conclude, I want to reiterate something that we expressed during one of our recent email updates because of how it normalizes unpleasant markets. If we think about the next 40 to 50 years, based on history, we can expect to live through 8 to 10 recessions, 11 to 14 bear markets. Again, a bear market is when the S&P falls by more than 20%, and approximately 4 to 5 full-blown stock market crashes. And furthermore, we fully expect that each recession, each bear market, and stock market crash will contain a unique mix of this time is different. And knowing this, our strategy could go one of two ways. One, we could attempt to time each event with precision, which we know is a near impossible feat containing a ton of risk. Or two, we can construct durable portfolios in alignment with plans meant to allow the ability to weather each storm while recognizing the unique market and tax planning related opportunities that downturns present. And I want to emphasize the tax planning aspect of this, given our belief that tax rates are likely to rise over time and they are everyone's greatest lifetime expense. So if unpleasant market events are a normal occurrence, and ultimately plant the seeds for future wealth creation, logic would tell us that behavioral reactions are one of the primary obstacles standing in the way of long-term success. And on that note, assuming everyone can hear me and that my phone is still working, we'll open it up for Q&A, first names only. And again, want to thank everyone on the call for their time this afternoon, and we want to wish everyone a healthy and memorable holiday season. Thank you.